Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 226 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host battling a case of the hiccups, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Yes, I've had the hiccups the entire day, and it is now 8:33 p.m. on Thursday, July 27th. I get the hiccups like twice a year, and when I do, it's just all day. So I'm going to try to keep the mic muted when I'm not talking and hopefully not hiccup during sentences, but I'm here and looking forward to answering some of our listener questions.
Now, what have you tried any of those crazy remedies to get rid of them? You know, like eating peanut butter upside down or whatever the heck they are.
I took some honey, ate a thing of sugar, didn't go away. So kind of annoying.
So you didn't do any of the crazy ones. So that's always funny. When you get the hiccups, someone's always like, hey, did you try this? And it's always the most ridiculous thing. Like, did you try slapping yourself? I'm like, what? No. Like, I always love you. I don't get hiccups often either. When I do, it's usually pretty bad. So I definitely feel your pain there. But yeah, it feels like it's been a bit since we were on the mic. We had the late week episode last week, but no early week this week because our schedules didn't line up. So been a little bit longer in between recordings here, but back with a fun episode today and another fun one on Sunday night for Monday release. We've got our mock draft that we're going on right now with 12 other industry analysts. So we'll have some guests on that one. And today we're doing a fun little, another mailbag. We have the mailbag episode, excuse me. Haven't done one of these in like a month and a half or so. So figured we'd sneak another one of these in tonight. Got a lot of fun questions. But before we get into all of those, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack, DynastyDugout.com, and my Patreon, ToolshedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. Let's hop right into it, Chris. We got like 15, 16 pretty good questions here. About two-thirds of them are prospect-focused, including this first one here, a little battle of Red Sox versus Yankees. First question was, Everson Pereira or Roman Anthony? Basically, who we got, and also, do you buy into the Morel comp on Pereira? What are your thoughts here, Chris?
I'm definitely in the Roman Anthony camp here. Obviously, seeing him a good bit this year has been pretty eye-opening. He has been absolutely tremendous in the games I've seen him. Plays a great center field. He's got a really good feel to hit. He doesn't chase. He's making a ton of contact in the zone. And overall, I think that Anthony has, well, Pereira, I'd argue, has a little bit more upside from a power speed standpoint. I just love the way that Roman Anthony plays the game. And, you know, it's hard to argue against what he's done in high A. And I wouldn't be surprised if they get aggressive with him and send him into double A at some point this year, just because of how solid he has been. He's been incredibly impressive. I know there are some concerns out there regarding Pereira and what he has done this year. You know, the power and speed is good, but it's, you know, questionable contact rates. I get that. Morel's an interesting comp, but here's the difference. I mean, we're looking at in AAA so far, Pereira has a 82% zone contact rate. The 67% overall contact rate is I mean, yes, it needs a tick up, but when you're making that much contact in the zone and you're chasing 30% of the time, like, you can make it work. So, like, you know, yeah, I don't like to see that any contact rate in the 60s, but again, looking at a very small sample in AAA, and when you go to his overall contact rate for the year, yeah, not much better, 66.5%. So he's right in the same range. But there's power, there's speed, he hits the ball hard. So if we see that tick up a little bit, then I think you'll be okay. I mean, you look at the kind of contact that he makes on pitches in the zone, and yeah, I'm going to pull up Christopher Morel's in-zone contact rate just to kind of see, you know, what we're looking at here, because, you know, I want to see for comparison's sake what's going on. I mean, Morel's 75% Z-con in the majors this year. He was 68.9% last year Z-con, and in AAA this year, Morel was 64%. That's overall, 64% overall, so I need to pull up the zone. And the zone contact was 73.6. So Pereira's making much more contact on pitches in the zone. So that's more encouraging to me. I like Pereira, but I really like Anthony, so I'm going there.
I had a feeling you'd go on that way. Obviously, you've been driving the Roman Anthony hype train for a bit now. And yeah, for me, I mean, this is a hard one. I have them basically back to back, and they're basically even. Like, I do have Pereira ranked one spot ahead, but they're all in the same tier, and obviously you have to rank one ahead of the other. But at this point, I think it boils down to how much do you value proximity? Because obviously Pereira could be up any day now, honestly. And Anthony, you know, maybe we see him maybe later next year, probably not really full-time, making an impact till 2025. So, you know, Pereira's probably got a year and a half or so jump on him at the major league level. I like both players, like a good amount. I've been tweeting about both, you know, Pereira especially of late, because I think I personally undervalued him in my own rankings that I corrected this last time out. And yeah, you know, he's a bit aggressive. The K rate's a bit higher, but it's not terrible. You know, Chris mentioned the contact rates there too. So I can see, you know, the Morel comp a little bit, but I don't think the issues are as extreme. I don't think there's going to be as much, you know, peaks and valleys as we've seen with Christopher Morel, where the highs are so high and the lows are even lower than that. So I don't fully buy into that, but I think there will be, you know, I don't think he's going to be he's hitting 300 this year in minor leagues. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I think we're looking at more like 260, 270 range, still solid. I think there's, you know, potential for 25 home runs in the profile and, you know, maybe 10 to 15 steals annually as well. So I think there's a really good all-around profile here. But again, I don't lean hard either way. I think they're both very talented players. Obviously, Anthony, especially within the Boston org, is just everyone's glowing and raving about this kid. So And, you know, hopefully I get to see him, you know, maybe later this year, probably until next year. But I think they're both top 25 prospects for me, so I'm very high on both of them for sure. Next one here going out west. What's holding back Yumin Lin from rising up rankings? Is it his size, velocity, competition he's faced? I don't see him as a top-tier guy. What's a realistic 90 percentile outcome? I mean, Yumin Lin's an interesting one, and we talked about him a handful of episodes ago. And I know, Chris, I think we both tweeted about him as well and probably wrote him up on our personal platforms. He's a very interesting profile because if you look at the surface stats, obviously he's been dominating this year in 15 starts, has a 3.07 ERA. WHIP is just a tick over one. You know, walk rate is well below 10%. And he's striking out over 30% of the batters he's faced. At the same time, he is undersized. He's 5'11", 160, and that looks about right. Just from some video, that looks pretty legit. Fastball is underwhelming. I mean, he commands it well, sure. But at the same time, it's, you know, low 90s at best, and then it dips down later on. So, you know, he's a hard one for me. Like, I like Yumin Lin, and I've moved him up by rankings a decent bit, but I just don't think the stuff is there. Like, look at the profile. You know, I've been, you know, preaching like the three P's, you know, production, profile, projection. The production's there for Yumin Lin. Absolutely, it is. You can't deny that. And he just turned 20 a couple of weeks ago, back on July 12th. So, you know, doing this, while being young for both high A and double A, very impressive. And I think he can be a major league rotation arm for sure, but what holds him back from being, you know, kind of moving way up rankings and being in the mix with the elite names that we talk about for pitching prospects is, I just don't think, you know, the other two P's are there. The profile, it's decent. Projection, you know, again, okay, but doesn't stand out. Like, those other two P's for me just don't stand out. So he's a guy that I think could, you know, flirt with top 100, but that's probably peak value for him in terms of being a prospect.
Yeah, I'm sailing everywhere if you can, because it's not a profile that's ever successful as an MLB starter. There's rare cases, sure. And so I'm willing to give him that and say there's a chance. But if we look at a list of starting pitchers in the major leagues that average below 90 miles an hour on their fastball, it's not many. I mean, you've got Tyler Anderson. You have Zach Greinke, Zach Davies, Braxton Garrett. Braxton Garrett is the first interesting name I've come to. Marco Gonzalez, Julio Teheran, Rich Hill, Corey Kluber. These are people that are averaging less than 90 miles an hour on their four-seam. And that's where his four-seam is set this year, below 90. The sinker, even less, at right at 88, right around 88, 89. Very few can make that work. And the secondaries are, like, the changeup is really good. I'll give him that. The changeup's a very, very good pitch. It's an easy plus pitch. But I just don't love the rest of the arsenal, personally. I know a lot of people talk about the curve and the slider, and, you know, I took a lot of flack for that on Twitter because I didn't really believe in it. It's a high, yeah, somebody called and said there was a high spinning pitch. Like, yes, they're high spinning pitches, but that doesn't always translate to active movement. And while the stuff is, it's okay on the breakers, it's not like plus. And I would say that you need at least a solid above average breaker to pair with that changeup if your fastball is going to sit below 90. Like, he's topped out at 91.5 and 92.7 on the sinker and four seam respectively. That's tops. That's not average. I told him he's averaging below 90 on both. So, like, for me, like, he's not even a top 200 guy. Like, the production is just kind of flies out the window to an extent when I look at the arsenal, and just, I just don't believe in the profile. And so, like, if you can sell to somebody that can, or looks at the numbers and thinks that you're getting like an ace type pitcher in SP2, like, I'd sell all day long. I could be wrong 100%, but this profile is like succeeding as a really good major league starter is like 1 in 100. And so chances just aren't good unless something drastically changes, but the body doesn't suggest that things are going to drastically change. So that's kind of my feelings and thoughts.
Yeah, it's not a body where you look and you're like, yeah, that guy's gonna add a ton of bulk. Like he's small. It's not like has a slight frame either. Like I think he's just gonna be a smaller guy. I don't see him all of a sudden being 6'2" and 190, you know, over the next year or two. But maybe he does have a little bit of bulk, but still, like, yeah, this is not a profile that's, you know, projects more as like a back end starter. And if, you know, if that's what you want, then go right ahead. But yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I was liking him, but the more I really dig into Heumann Lin, it's, I don't know. I mean, I think he's okay. Again, I think he's decent, but I do think the hype got a little bit out of control, and I'm partially to blame for that, as I was writing him up a little bit too. So, but moving on, another pitching prospect here in the National League, actually a few of them. Right, this next one is, do you think Connor Phillips can control his walk issues? Does he carry big reliever risk? And also, Cade Horton versus Connor Phillips call-up stash. I mean, I like Connor Phillips a decent bit. You know, the walk rate is pretty high. I mean, this year he's walked 44 in 87 and a third innings between AA and AAA. That equates to it's 11.6%. That obviously, I want to see that come down, but at the same time, I don't really get really concerned until it's like 12+%, like Jack Leiter range. But at the same time, there is some reliever risk with this. The stuff is really good, and he's another kind of, everyone's talking about obviously Andrew Abbott and all the bats that are up there, but the Reds got a couple other, you know, decent pitchers and decent prospects coming up through that are still pretty undervalued, and I think Phillips is definitely one of them. You know, Chase Petty I think is undervalued still, Hector Rodriguez, Carlos Jorge, a few others, but I do think there is some reliever risk here, and this is an issue he's had his entire minor league career. Like, it's not just something that happened this year. Looking at in 273 career innings dating back to 2021, the walk rate is 13.1%. So it has come down a touch, but I don't know. This is a guy that if you're not commanding your pitches well, you know, Great American Ballpark can eat you up. So, you know, Cade Horton is definitely like a couple of tiers above Phillips for me. I have Phillips, guy that could push top 100 at some point if the walk rate comes down, but Cade Horton is a guy that has shown better stuff and better command and control. So definitely Horton by a considerable margin over Phillips for me.
I'm in the same boat. I much prefer Cade Horton. You know, the stuff is definitely there with both, but you have just more command control from Cade Horton, which is what obviously matters a good bit here. And so it's been encouraging to see what Horton has done this year. And I'm just really intrigued. Like, he's in one of my upper tiers of prospects. And
yeah,
he just looks the part of everything you want to see in an arm. With Connor Phillips, I mean, the command and control is probably always going to be an issue. Like, we don't often just see guys just fix it. Like, it just doesn't really happen that often. So I'm intrigued. He's got good arsenal. I mean, the last start was certainly one that was much needed. 11 Ks, two walks, and a 16.3% swing and strike rate. Looked really good in that last start. The arsenal is really good with Connor Phillips. He throws the fastball pretty heavily. It's 96 on average. A lot of ride at the top of the zone. And gets ground balls with it, which is interesting when you look at a fastball that goes up. But he's also throwing a pretty good slider and curve as well. Even mixes in a cutter. So I like Connor Phillips' arsenal, but I do think that he still has some development to be had here.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're on completely different levels right now. Well, I think we both like Phillips a decent amount. To put it in perspective, I have Cade Horton as my current number. It might even be number four, because I don't know. Has Brian Wu graduated? He's close.
I'm not sure. I don't know. As of this moment, I'm not certain. I know he's close.
Let's just take Wu out, because if he hasn't graduated, he's pretty close. So the only three pitching prospects I have ahead of him right now, and it's another guy's about to graduate too. So Paul Skeens, Gavin Williams, Ricky Tiedemann, and then I had Wu and then Cade Horton. He's right in a similar range to Tink Hentz, and that's actually the only guys in that range. Is a little drop down to the next group, and then a little jump up to the top group. So I think he's solidly in tier two right now. It's a small tier, but and then I have, let's see, where do I have Phillips. Yeah, Phillips is like, yeah, well, I'd say that's two tiers down. Phillips is in the same tier as, you know, I have like Brock Porter in that tier, Anthony Salametto, Drew Thorpe, Noah Schultz, Noble Meyer, who I just added into my rankings, of course. You know, Nick Frasso, guys like that. I think that's the tier he's in. And that's, yeah, that's about two tiers below Cade Horton. So, yeah, definitely we'll go Cade Horton there over Connor Phillips. Next question here. What can we expect from PCA? That's Pete Crow Armstrong, outfielder prospect for the Cubs. In the bigs, he's a top 10 to 25 prospect, and I feel like I'm missing something. I'm not sure what you're missing. Oh, probably meaning why is he ranked that high? Okay. You know, because I think there's, you know, he's not as, you know, sexy as most of the top prospects in that range, but this is a guy that the contact skills are absolutely there. The approach is solid. You know, not a super high walk rate guy, but keeps the K rate in check. You know, he's 25 plus steal a year type of guy. And the power is the X factor. I think right now he's kind of like that 15 homer ish type of guy. I mean, he's hitting for more power this year than he has in the past. He's up to 13 home runs in 70 games, 523 slugs. So that's great to see there. Actually, he's had over 500 slug every year of his minor league career too. So like sneaky power in that 15 to 18 homer range. I think he's just going to be a really good all-around profile, high floor type, and the guy that can provide, you know, pretty solid numbers across the board. So I think that's why he's up there. And for me, I have him. So I have it filtered to just pitchers here. Let me get that filter off. I have PCA. Yeah, I have him 16, right between Paul Skeens and Marcelo Mayer. So I think it's legit. This is not sexy because he doesn't really stand out in any one area, but can do a lot of things well and has a high floor. So I think that's why, at least for me, why I have him in that range.
Yep, he's a top 15 prospect for me. The contact skills are the biggest concern for me because I believe in the power, and we know the speed is there as well. He's running 70% contact rate, which is just around the cusp of where I don't and want a player to be. Anything below 70, not usually good. You can get up to like
that's interesting though. I thought his contact rate would be higher than that.
70.8% on the year.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's really struggled with that his entire career, which you look at the profile and you probably, like you said, would guess that it would be higher. Last year it was a little bit better. It was 75% last year, 79% zone. So like those have always been a tick below average, I'd say. So that's, to me, going to be the question. Like, how does he fare against like high-end pitching? Like, can he handle spin? Can he handle the, you know, the improved pitching as he moves up levels? To me, he's shown that he can hit for power. Like, you know, 12 home runs this year. Like, that's 13 homers on the year, 25 stolen bases. The average is good. The OBP is good. The slug's good. Like, all those things you want to see. But just, can he bump up the contact rate enough where that number doesn't continue to dip as he moves up, which is usually what happens.
Right.
So even if he is a below average hitter, I like the power speed there. And I think he is a pretty interesting player. But yeah, I mean, I have him top 15. I understand, you know, maybe a little bit of concern there, but that what you get from him, like he's going to play an elite center field. Like he's an incredibly hard worker. He's a gamer. Like this going to be, he's going to be the face of the Cubs franchise. And so I think that's why you see him ranked so high.
Yeah, that does surprise me that the contact rates were lower than I expected on him. But yeah, like I said, that there's a great all-around profile here. You could do a lot of things well. And if that contact rate can tick back up again, you know, be a where do you think the power ends up? Like, do you think he's over 20 home runs a year?
I think he's probably pushing close. I could see him being a 20-30 guy. I think
okay.
It's a reasonable number.
And I'm sure Mets fans don't want to hear that, but yeah, I think there's a pretty good career upcoming for Pete Crow Armstrong. I think that Cubs team is going to be, you know, they get some good young talent in that organization coming up on both sides of the ball. You know, I think you see Cade Horton next year. I think you see PCA next year. So could be a bright future for the Cubs here. See how they build around all these guys. Next up on the docket here, another surprising call up in Marco Luciano, and we kind of had like a bunch of questions that were kind of, you know, kind of together here. So Luciano, I think is the question here. What can we expect? And then who are three prospects that could get the call to help their teams for a push? And also, do we see a 2023 draftee? starting pitcher that could be a pen call-up. AJ Smith should be back soon. Keith, Carter, Mayo, Mead, Manzardo, etc. So basically just like a lot of questions about, you know, who's going to be up rest of the season. Obviously, we've had a lot of the really big names that were high up, you know, the stash lists, you know, the like, same thing I do every week over on Roto Baller. You know, we got Cowser up, we got Encarnacion Strand up, we had Westbrook up, McLean up, all these guys. So the list is not quite as high as it used to be, but we'll start with Luciano here. He's a guy that I did not see up this year. So this one kind of surprised me. I know there's like rumblings came and then it happened, but I just didn't think we'd see Marco Luciano this year. You know, obviously, you know, we've both seen Luciano live back out in the AFL back in 2021, Chris. Yes.
That's correct.
That sounds right. Yeah. That's not, no, wasn't last year. Or was he there last year too? Was he there 2 years in a row? He might have been.
He might have been, but I feel like if he was, he didn't play when we were out there last
year. Maybe that was it. Yeah, maybe that was it. But yeah, we saw him at least in 2021. And, you know, the power is there. Like, I don't think anybody questions the power with Luciano. And it's good to see him running a little bit again. That's something that kind of went completely out of his profile for a couple of years. But he got 6 steals this year. I don't think it'll be a massive part of this game. But if he can just add a little bit of speed, that would be very beneficial to his profile. And approach is pretty solid. Walk rate well over 10%. Keeps the K rate in check. He just hasn't been hitting for average. I don't know if you have the contact numbers for Luciano in front of you, Chris, but I'd be interested to see what those are because he's really struggled to hit for average this year. He hit 228 in AA in 242 plate appearances, 235 overall because he hit 292 in his 6 games for AAA Sacramento in the PCL. But I don't know. It's just a profile where I don't know how much speed he provides. I don't know how high the average is going to be. You know, could be a 25-30 home run bat, absolutely. But what else is he bringing to the table? So he's not a guy. Like, I've always been a little lower than most on him. I think the perceived value has always been a little too high for my liking. So I'm not really rushing out to get him in redraft leagues outside of maybe super deep leagues. But yeah, I'm kind of not super high on Luciano. He's decent, but again, I'm a bit lower than most on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even in like my top 100.
No, he's not. I think he's like, he's kind of like parked himself in the top like 125 range. Where do they have him? So Adam, last update was 109. So yeah, he's kind of like in that next grouping outside of my top 100. Similar guys in that range for hitters. Denzel Clark, Kevin Parada, Sedan Rafael is in that range. Zach Veen's dropped down into that range. You know, guys like that. Aslevis Basabe, so in that cluster. But again, like I think the power will be there, but again, how valuable is like a profile like this? Like, this is not like a profile that is sought after a lot. Like, it doesn't provide a lot of speed. I mean, even at most, what's he, a 5-6 steal guy? And in this day and age, that's basically nothing with all the how steals are way, way up this year. And again, I don't think he's more than a 250 hitter. So, like, if he's like 240, 25, and 5, I mean, that's rosterable, but I don't know. Again, perceived value for him has always been way too high, in my opinion.
I mean, at best, you were looking at like a 260 hitter that hit 35 home runs with no speed. I feel like that's what everybody kind of wanted. And, you know, even so, like, you know, was that worthy of being as high on him as many were? The contact rate is 67% this year on him, so it's not great. I certainly want to see that a little bit higher. But yeah, I'm surprised they pushed him up, honestly, that they got that aggressive with him. So a question about, he said, who are 3 prospects that could get the call to help their teams for a push? And do we see a 2023 draftee? I'm going to go no on that. I think a lot of people have been kind of like suggesting that, but like the Rangers have said that they don't intend to bring up Langford. The Nationals have 0 reason to push Dylan Cruz, and I don't think Paul Skenes pitches a single inning in professional ball this year outside of backfield. So maybe I'm completely off on this, but I'm saying none of the 2023 draftees are up.
I'm definitely in agreement with you there. Like, I think the first 2 up are probably Rhett Lauder and maybe Nolan Schenwell, but I don't even see them up this year.
No. Yeah, I mean, the Angels could get aggressive with Schenwell, but I think that would be a massive mistake. Like, those are holes you just kind of fill via the trade market, like as it comes up. But I just don't see them pushing them. I don't think we see any 2023 draftees this year, unless it's like just a reliever that a team needs. That's a possibility, but I don't see any of the big time guys up that are big time fantasy contributors.
Yeah, I mean, the guys atop my stash list right now, it's kind of like a hodgepodge bunch. Like, you know, maybe we see Colt Keith. I think there's a possibility we see him down the stretch. I mean, I say that I'd throw 40% chance we see Colt Keith. So still below 50. Maybe Ryan Mauricio's up at some point. We've kind of been waiting for him for a bit, but they don't, Mets don't seem like they want to call him up right now. You know, maybe we see Matt Mervis come back up. Mansardo is, I don't know, maybe Michael Bush, who knows, the Dodgers keep acquiring middle infielders, so maybe he gets traded. That's a thing to keep, you know, a lookout for. I mentioned in my article on Roto Ballers, you know, these guys that are blocked now but could be traded. You know, maybe the Rangers trade Justin Foscue, who is thoroughly blocked in that Texas infield. Maybe they want to grab an arm and they trade Foscue and the package should get an arm. So just kind of keep an eye on a lot of these rumors that are swirling, that, you know, the verified rumors from decent sources, not just the fans that are making crap up, which they always do this time of year. But yeah, there's not anybody that's both an impact player and has a high percent likelihood that they're up. Like, do we see Kobe Mayo this year? Maybe, but again, small percent chance. And then like the rest of the guys that are higher on my list, like maybe we see Rafaela, who could provide some speed. Maybe we see Everson Pereira. Maybe we see Curtis Mead, or, you know, like Justin Henry Molloy, Mason Wynn. I think we could see, especially if St. Louis trades Paul DeJong. But again, it's just a bunch of maybes, and like all, like Chris mentioned, all the really big impact guys are either A, already up, or B, probably aren't going to be up. So deeper leagues, you know, I'd say maybe go Keith, maybe go Mauricio, Mayo if you're feeling frisky, but that's kind of it right now.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Oh, we got to add something there, Chris?
Nope, you're good. Nope,
you're good? All right. All right. Next, we're going over to the Major League side here. How would you rank these three long-term? Skubal, Detmers, and Edward Cabrera. I think Skubal is definitely one for me here. Oh, I'm on the fence with the other two, because the other two have just both at times shown a lot of promise. Obviously, the stuff for both is really good, but they both also shown, unfortunately, that they're incredibly inconsistent, start to start, week to week, month to month. I don't know. It's Skubal, and then I'm on the fence on the other two. What are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, it's easily Skubal for me at one. Detmers is two, and Cabrera is three, and I'd say there's a gap between the first two and Cabrera. He's just such a reliever profile. There's so much here. And I've just kind of sat in that boat since I've heard Craig Mish talk about him. Like, Mish doesn't spit out any crap. Like, he's going to tell you how it is. And he's been saying that for so long that he's not going to be a starter. He doesn't have the command to be a starter. And we haven't seen enough consistency from him for long enough to lead me to believe that he can be a viable starting pitcher. So until that, I mean, like, Detmers is a good bit ahead of Cabrera for me. So Skubal, Detmers, Cabrera.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I'm trying to see where I have them in my rankings. I have Cabrera at 252 and Reed Detmers. Okay, 173. So they're farther apart than I thought. So, yeah, I would go Detmers as well. But I have Skubal. I think he's in the 125 range. Let me confirm that. 136, but I'm still tinkering with that. I might move him up a bit there. But he's looked really good since he came back. Velocity's up. I think he has the highest upside and highest floor of all three of these guys. So, yeah, he's the easy number one for me. Next year, can you speak to what a top-end outcome of Carson Williams looks like, shortstop prospect for the Tampa Bay Rays? I know he's rising, but still undervalued. I mean, he's always been a hard one for me to rank because we know the power speed is there. It's just, is the hit tool going to be there? Like, you look at what he's done this year, and then he's a guy I've had on the cusp of my top 100 for a bit now. I might even have him inside my top 100, but he's always been right in that general range. This year in high A, 323 plate appearances, 15 home runs and 11 steals, 255, 359, 500 slash. You know, K rate is right around 30%. Does walk a decent amount, though. He's had a walk rate above 10% every year, but always had a bit of a higher strikeout rate, above 30% for his entire minor league career. So that's kind of the question. I'd love to see, Chris, what are his contact rates this year for Carson Williams?
He's running right at a 70% contact rate, which all is right. Up. Yeah, I mean, it's up from 65% last year, which is encouraging.
Not terrible.
He doesn't chase often at all. I mean, he's a very low chase rate, which is evident in the walk rate. So he's selective. He's almost maybe too selective going deep into counts. And, you know, that's kind of ballooning the strikeout rate a bit. So, yeah, I would say there's swing and miss in this profile for sure. But I also think that it's a bit inflated by the fact that he just is patient. Swing rate's around 42%, which is probably close to league average. It's not like Emmanuel Rodriguez is like on the extreme. He's like at 36%.
Yeah.
But, you know, the strikeout rate is higher than you want to see. But I'll tell you, when I saw him this year, Bowling Green, he was incredible. Like, I mean, he was right up there with Caminero with performance. He's a slick shortstop. He will be a major league shortstop. He's really good in the field with a really good arm. And that power speed's really interesting. So I've had Williams up in the top 25-ish range for a couple months now. And, you know, I just think if the hit tool even comes along a bit, then he's a really, really solid fantasy asset.
Yeah, I've probably been too low on him. So I do need to reevaluate where I have him. Right now, he's at 96 for me. So given that those contact rates aren't as bad as I thought they were going to be, yeah, I'm definitely going to move him up in my next update. We'll see where that is. But yeah, the power speed is absolutely legit, and he's shown that consistently, shown the good walk rate. So there's definitely a lot to like in the profile as well. Next question here. It's actually a pretty fun question. How would you rank the fantasy-relevant chases, which are Chase DeLauder, Chase Davis, Chase Hampton, Chase Petty, Chase Meidroth, Chase Dolander, and maybe even Chase Sosa? There's a lot of chases. I didn't realize there's that many chases until you – well, you look at like our mock draft, like a third of the league is named Chris. There's you, Blessing, Welsh, and
Chris at Baseball Pods.
Yep, Chris Baseball Mayer. Pods. Yep. Yeah, a lot of Chris's in that. And there's a couple of Matts. So like half the draft is either Chris or Matt that we have there. So, yeah. But for chases here, so right now I have them. I think I know the order off the top of my head. So I have Chase Davis ranked the highest, and then Chase DeLauder, there's a gap. So Davis would be tier one here for me. We both obviously love Chase Davis. So we talked about him recently on our FYPD episode. And then there's a drop. The next three are DeLauder, Hampton, and Petty, all on a tier there. And I think I have them ranked in that order. So DeLauder would be two, Hampton three, Petty four. And then a massive, massive drop down to, I liked Dolander, but going to Colorado obviously just made me not like him much anymore. So I think there's a good, I'd say at least 150 pick drop down to him. And then Meidroth's probably last tier of all these prospects. I've seen, you know, we've both seen Meidroth. I think there's like a utility backup infielder, you know, role in his future, but not a fantasy relevant role. So he puts the bat on the ball. You know, he's just a solid little ball player. Every major team needs a player like Chase Meidroth, but I just don't see him bringing much fantasy value. So he's behind all these guys for me. So yeah, it's Davis, then DeLauder, Hampton, Petty, massive drop, Dolander, Meidroth.
Yeah, so I just filtered my sheet by the chases, and it's a pretty similar order here of Chase Davis at one and Chase Hampton in a close second. there for me. He's really rose up and really love what I've seen from him this year. Chase DeLauder comes in at 3 among this group for me. And then it is Petty. And that's why I have Silseth ahead of Petty. I'm sorry. Chase Silseth, Chase Petty, and then Dolander, who, like you said, the landing spot just absolute obliteration of any value that he had. Really hate it, him going there, but it is what it is. And then, like I said, not popular, but Chase Mydroth, he's at the very back. I mean, he's below 400 slug in double A. He's 5'7". He's physically maxed out. And I know I'm the Chase Mydroth hater. I'm sure people are saying that. And people have said that. Like, but I just try to speak the truth about what I see. Like you said, saw him a lot. You've seen him. I mean, just look at the last 30 games. Hitting 236, 336 slug, 23% K rate. Like, I mean, it just doesn't do much for me fantasy-wise. So, like you said, useful player. He's going to probably make the majors. But I'm just not in on him for fantasy.
Yep. Totally agree. And I totally forgot to put Silseth in there. I have him between Petty and Dolander for me. All right. Next question here. Most of the upside pitchers in AA and above are known at this point. Do you see any guys at high A or below that have legitimate ace upside that still may be flying under the radar? I mean, ace upside is a lot. I mean, I don't throw on that term very often at all, but I mean, Mizorowski's still in A. Is he in high A? Is he double A?
He's in double A.
Oh, he did go up to double A. Okay. So, all right. So not him. He would have been one. I thought he might have still been high A. I can't remember where he was. So, I mean, let's see. Let's go through the list here. Was Tink Hansen high A or double A right now?
He's in double A too.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. He got called out. Yes. All these guys that possibly, I won't even say, no, I don't think like Drew Thorpe doesn't have ace upside. I mean, Jackson Jobe, I think, has ace upside. If everything clicks for him, he's one. Maybe a Noah Schultz. I know. I think you might be in agreement with that one, Chris. Nobody else I'm really seeing here. This is jumping out. Dylan Lesko. I don't know. I think he's like a tick down from ace upside for me. But yeah, those are the only really two names that, I mean, maybe some of the guys, you know, maybe Noble Meyer, who was just drafted, obviously, but, you know, most FYPs haven't happened yet. But really, the two that stick out for me that are below double A would be Jackson Jobe and Noah Schultz. I mean, again, I don't like to throw on that term lightly. So those are the only two that I can really see off the top of my head here.
Yep. Jobe was the clear one for me that I saw. He's been really, really good since coming back from injury. He's just got to stay healthy. That's really the biggest thing.
Yep.
But we're looking at an arsenal, to me, that is a top three arsenal in the minors. Like, if all clicks, then it's super easy to see ace upside here. I mean, he's just continued to perform. Last start, struck out 7/3 2/3, 45% whiff rate. I mean, he's throwing fastball sitting 98, 97 with a ton of run, ton of ride. The changeup having up to 18 inches of arm side run, and the slider up to 16 inches of sweep. Like, that arsenal is stellar. So to me, like, that says he has an ace upside there. So I'm in on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think he's still a little undervalued. I think he's still a pretty decent dynasty target right now. All right, next question here. We got 6-7 more here. We'll try to get through them all. How do you quantify the ceiling/floor difference between two prospects who may be side-by-side in rank but offer very different future outcomes? Thinking fast riser like Walcott compared to someone safe, lacking star potential. All right, let's look at this. Let's each pick out a guy that's close to Walcott in our rankings that will kind of fit that kind of other end of the spectrum here. So right now I have Walcott 43. Who's a safe? I don't have many safe guys in his range. I don't know. Would you consider Heston Kjerstad safe? I have Kjerstad about 5 spots ahead of Walcott.
Ish.
Yeah, safe-ish. Yeah. I mean, all the other guys are kind of, I mean, Luis Matos I have in the same range as Walcott.
Sal Frelick.
Ooh, Sal Frelick's a good one. Where did I drop Sal Frelick to? I thought he was in this range. Why can I not find Sal Frelick? All right, Control F. Control F is your friend on spreadsheets. I know he's in this range. I'm just blind. Oh, I dropped him down into the 60s. I didn't think I dropped him down that far. But yeah, I think that's a pretty fair player to kind of put him up against here. And it's a tough question, Chris. You know, I think something I've always struggled with, I think it's not easy for anybody to factor in the risk versus the reward, you know, the, you know, upside versus the safeness. So, I mean, I think my rankings lean a bit more, I'd say probably 2/3 to 1/3 in terms of upside versus floor, just because we're seeing more of these guys click. We're seeing more of these guys, you know, kind of rise up quicker, like these, you know, DSL standouts that we maybe didn't jump high enough on previously. So now I've kind of adjusted and I'm being a little bit more aggressive with these guys now, because we're seeing, again, we're like, think back like 5 years ago, Chris, or something like that. Like we weren't seeing like Jackson Holiday at double A at 19, Jackson Churio double A at 18. Like we weren't seeing a whole ton of that. We're seeing a lot more now. We're seeing a lot more of these double A to major league jumps. So yeah, I do factor about a 2/3 to 1/3 split, but it's not an exact science here. It kind of varies prospect to prospect for me, profile to profile, but it is a hard balance for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong way, I guess, to go about this question or to look at someone like a high upside or a safe type profile. But I always say the more shallow your league is, the less prospects that are rostered, the more you should just shoot for upside. Yep. So like, that's really a big factor for me. And if you get into like a 12 or a 15 team league, like you're looking for a good mix. So you want to have a little bit of both, but in general, like it depends on how much you trust yourself. Like I feel like I trust myself enough just to shoot on upside. And if it doesn't work out, just pick up the next guy. So always have those spots to churn and continue to move on from players, and you're going to miss, like you're going to drop somebody and miss out on them. They're going to end up being good. But using those spots for upside is kind of the way I play, because I feel like that's the way to maximize trade value, is to just pick up the hot hands, let them rise in value and trade them. I mean, like I said, you may trade off Walcott and he may end up being an absolute superstar. But you could trade off Walcott and get a lot. He could end up being nothing. We don't know. He's 17 years old. So I tend to lean more towards upside for fantasy purposes, because, you know, how much do people care about boring profiles and trades? And that's what I'm looking for, is for trade value.
Yeah, I guess we've talked about perceived value is everything. And when it comes to like this debate here between Sal Frelick and Sebastian Walcott, we could put out a poll, like who would you rather trade for right now in dynasty leagues? And I'd guarantee at least 80% would say Sebastian Walcott. That might even be low. You know, everyone wants to go for the sexy upside play. So yeah, definitely echo a lot of what Chris said there. Next question is about Josh Lowe. How do you value Josh Lowe? Power, speed, but young and platoon issues. Yeah, Josh Lowe, it's like whenever we think like, all right, it's finally clicking. Like earlier this year, Josh Lowe was very, very good. Earlier in the year was kind of shooting up rankings, and then he kind of went into a funk. Overall, the overall numbers look fine. 272, 315, 481, 13 home runs and 22 steals. So he's on, you know, close to a 20-30 pace right now. Quality of contact is decent, 11.2% barrel, 39.5 hard hits. But the walk rate is below average. K rate isn't bad. It's 27.3%. But zone contact is below average, 75.7%. Chase is way too high. Whiff's way too high. So that's leading to a lot of the inconsistencies there. So, you know, there's a lot of these players, like the Jared Kelnicks of the world and the Josh Lowe's and these Brandon Marshes that have the upside but are just super inconsistent. I think it's kind of, you got to play the hot hand. And, you know, when it's not a matter of if, but when Josh Lowe heats up again, maybe you cash out at that point in time and get a guy that's, you know, you can rely on more consistently than Josh Lowe, because these types of profiles are hard to really correct to the point where they become consistent players. And I think you're just going to be riding the ups and downs with them. Like Jared Kelnick, you'll see him go on this heater for 3 weeks, and then he goes and he's one of the worst hitters in baseball for a month. And And I don't think it's going to be that extreme with Josh Lowe, but you see these guys with a high whiff, high chase rates, you know, they're going to be super inconsistent. So I would look to, you know, cash out potentially when he goes on his next little heater, which he'll probably do before the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be up and down. Like I said, split issues. He's only had 30 plate appearances against lefties this year.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I forgot to even go into that.
Yeah, I mean, even against righties, like he's certainly trended in the wrong direction month over month. And it almost looks like the April and May, you know, dominance may be a bit of a mirage. So that's obviously a bit concerning too. So I don't know what to do with him. I probably went too high on him, pushing him in the top 100 for Dynasty after May. But again, like everything looked like it was there. He had 11 home runs and 13 stolen bases in April and May. And was hitting for high average and plenty of high of OBP. So I don't know. I just fear this profile. Look at Nolan Gorman too, another one that has kind of fallen off. So like I said, it may be a case where you go back and kind of reevaluate how we think about these prospects that are like this, have platoon issues and contact concerns.
Yeah, like another one that is kind of like a hot name right now that doesn't quite have the same profile as like a Josh Lowe, but somewhere the platoon part is what I want to focus on, like Edward Julian. Everyone's looking at Edward Julian like, oh, look, he's hitting 302, 387 OBP, 552 slug. He's on like a 30 to 35 homer pace right now, 10 home runs and 200 plate appearances. But out of those 200 plate appearances, only 22 have been against lefties. So, I mean, I like Edward Julian a decent amount. I think he's going to be a decent player, but I think people are going like wicked bonkers over him because look at the overall line and don't look at the fact that he's just not even getting played against lefties. And he has four singles in those 22 plate appearances. So, you know, 182, 182, 182 slash line right across the board there. So, yeah, it's another guy that I think you got to kind of pump the brakes on a little bit here, even though I do think he's a good player long term. But just you got to show that you can hit lefties, and B, the team has to trust you to hit lefties. And Julian's not there right now.
Nope.
Next, how are you valuing guys that have struggled for prolonged times this year as rookies, like James Outman, Tristan Casas, Grayson Rodriguez, Brandon Thott, Miguel Vargas, and Joey Weimer? So a lot of names there. I mean, Casas is the one here. Like, he's the one that's figured it out right now. I mean, I'm still very high on G-Rod as well, and I would buy low on Miguel Vargas, even though I have kind of adjusted my expectations on him. But, you know, Casas has absolutely been figuring it out. He's still getting, you know, again, there's a little bit of platoon here issue here. He's not being played that much against lefties, though. I don't think it was ever really much of an issue in the minor leagues, at least not to a massive degree. So not a huge concern for me long term. But Casas, like the buy low window on Casas is, if it's not closed already, it's about to close. But I think you can still buy low on G-Rod. You know, Thought, Outman. Outman's got one of those profiles that we were mentioning earlier that's just super risky. Like, you know, he'll be like, and this year he already showed that. He started off the year, he was one of the hottest hitters in baseball at one point in time. And a guy that was, oh, was he top 50 Dynasty? And then, you know, got to the point where he wasn't even playing that regularly. And then he went on another little bender. But he's another guy. Again, I mean, wait till he heats up and cash out, because that profile is super inconsistent. But I don't know. Like Weimer, similar profile, high upside, low floor. You know, Vargas is a weird one for me now, Chris. Like, where are you at on Vargas, especially here? Because, you know, the numbers just have been extremely underwhelming across the board with his metrics, and the power just has not been there much at all. And even where he was excelling in the minors, he's taken a step back in that regard. So I think Vargas is the interesting one here. So where are you at on Vargas?
He's really tough.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he was so consistent. There's always been a bit of a lull from power, at least. And you always kind of desired more from like his exit velocities. There's always been pretty good contact too. And that's sustained. Like, you look at his minor league track record this year and he's still making a ton of contact, but the power's just kind of meh, it's not there. So yeah, that's certainly something to think about with Vargas. And like, what kind of power does he actually get to? And I'm not sure it's what we think. And I thought coming in the season, he could be a 20 home run guy. Like, that was kind of what we were looking at. And that may still be the case long term, but I'm definitely not as confident on that as I once was.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely there with you. All right, next one's on Drew Jones. Having a really hard time valuing Drew Jones. Feel like he's plummeted down rankings, but the sample is still small due to injuries, and the ceiling is still super high. Would you take other young ceiling plays like Josue DePaula, Xavier Isaac, or Lazaro Montez over him? I think at this point, I don't think I have Montez over him yet. DePaula and Isaac, though, I think I could get behind. I think they're all a similar spot in my rankings. I think the highest upside out of this bunch is still Drew Jones, especially if the A, he can stay healthy, and B, the power comes along like we think it could. But at this point, I think DePaula and Isaac are two guys that I could take over him right now.
I have Isaac ahead of him. It's not even a sample size thing for me. It's watching all the games that he did play and looking at how ugly the swing is. Like, it's not a good swing at all right now. There's a lot of things to be concerned about with Jones. And yeah, there are tools there. I mean, he's great in the field. He's got good speed, but he's going to really struggle to get to power and make contact unless things like majorly change. He's got a lot of work to do. Still a top 100 guy for me, but I was way too high on him preseason and like coming after the draft. Like, wish I hadn't been that high because there are a lot of red flags and I'm not sure if the swing can work. And so, yeah, right now I actually think I have DePaula and Isaac ahead of him. I don't have Lazaro Montez ahead of him because those are also really bad contact skills. I know everybody loves Montez, but he has terrible contact skills and big power. Yep. So that's kind of where I am on Jones.
Yeah, I just want to publicly apologize to anyone that took Drew Jones over Jackson Holiday because of anything I said last year. I very much apologize about that. 100% wrong. Willing to admit that for sure. And I think that especially, you know, there's certain things that happen, you know, with players or whatever that really make you think about your philosophy. And that was one of them for me. Like, that was like, why did I rank Drew Jones one, even though it was close, but it's obviously Holiday is now, you know, arguably the top prospect in baseball. Well, Jones is more of a back third top 100 guy. So yeah, I still think I'm still in on Jones, so to speak. I still have him top 100 as well. In fact, I have him exactly at 75 range. 72 right now. And I think that's a fair range for him given the upside he has. But yeah, got to start seeing A, need to see him play, and B, need to see some improvements at the plate for him to kind of rise back up rankings. But I also went way too high on Drew Jones. It was definitely, you know, tempted by the upside and shouldn't have been, at least not to where I ranked him. Next, do you think Miguel Blyce bounces back after his injury and comes back up the rankings next season? He had so much helium this preseason. Interesting to see his shine fade so much. Yeah, Chris, I think Blyce is a great buy low right now. I mean, assuming we can, you know, assuming that there's no like long-term effects from the injury, I think he's a great buy low. Like, I don't see any reason why he can't just be his speed bump in his you know development, and he can just continue to rise up rankings and, you know, become the player we all think he can be. So absolutely, I'd buy low.
There are some red flags with like off the field stuff. Like, he didn't put in the work this past offseason to kind of build on that hype. And I know the org was a little disappointed in that. He was kind of into the party scene a little while and hoping it's just a young phase that he grows out of because the talent is there and he could be fine. Like you said, the talent's certainly there. So I've taken a shot. I think the cost is depleted enough, but he's really gonna have to work hard to bounce back because the perception I know within the org is not that great.
Yeah, but I think in general, I think that obviously the talent's there. So I think if he can fix some of those issues, I think he's still going to be a pretty good player, always has the potential to be. Could you talk about where recent prospect graduates would rank if they were still prospect eligible? I'm wondering about Royce Lewis, Jordan Walker, and Edward Julian. So for me, you know, Jordan Walker, I'm still very much in on Walker. I know the, you know, surface stats haven't been gaudy like they could potentially be, but Walker would still be top five for me. I still have him that high. He'd still be right in that Churio, Caminero, Wood, you know, Holiday, Walk, Cruz range for sure. As for Lewis, and Lewis is a guy that he was, I think, in the top 25-ish range. And I think talent-wise, he would still deserve to be there. But starting to get some durability, a lot of durability questions with him. Can he ever stay healthy? So I think I'd probably move him down to like the 30s somewhere. And then who's last? Julian, probably in the 40 to 50 range, I think is where I probably would have him right now. For OBP, it'd be a little bit higher, obviously. But where would you have these guys, Chris?
I think Walker probably two or three. He'd be right in that range. So top five guy pretty easily. I think Royce would be a top 25 guy, but with top 10 talent, just can't stay healthy. Edward Julian would probably be like top 30 in OBP and like top 50 in like a batting average league.
Yeah. So I think we're pretty much in line there. The last question to round up the show. Can only keep three: Heston Kjerstad, Kyle Manzardo, Junior Caminero, Jason Dominguez, 12-person, 5x5 roto, AL only OBP. Thank you for adding all that at the end, because that definitely provides context. And, you know, I was looking at that. I was like, all right, my answer would have probably changed if this was average, not OBP. So I think, you know, Caminero, easy. Like, no matter, average OBP doesn't matter. Easy one right there. Manzardo, pretty easy two. And if it was average, I would probably say Kjerstad. Since it's OBP, I will go Dominguez for the third.
Yeah, it's for me, OBP wise.
Dominguez and Kjerstad are super close in OBP as well. So if you wanted, you know, a bit more power upside, I could see going Kjerstad too as well.
Yeah, I mean, Caminero is one. I think I'd probably go. It's tough because Manzardo and Kjerstad are going to be the same position. So it makes it a little harder. I'm wondering if you can trade one. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
If you can make a trade, I would do so. Because while Dominguez has slipped a little bit, like, I still believe in him, and I like the upside potential there. So I would lean that way if you could trade. But Dominguez is probably the odd man out for me at the moment.
I think if you're going to trade one of them, though, I think Dominguez is the guy. That's something. Obviously, he has that name. Obviously, he's been on the radar for a while now. Those super insane comps. So, I don't think Kjerstad has the as sexy of a name for prospect purposes as Dominguez. So, if you were to trade one and go that route, which I definitely agree with, I definitely would go Dominguez there. All right, that's gonna wrap us up though. Thanks for everyone for tuning in and all the questions we got. They were a lot of fun. We always love doing these mailbag episodes. So we hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for all of our rankings, extra written work, audio work, Discords, Dynasty Trade Calculator for Chris, all a lot of fun stuff there. So make sure to check those out, and we will see you again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.